Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and 1360 AM Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas. I hope you enjoyed our show last week with Ralph Nader. We were very proud of it here at Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And our show today is very timely. We'll be talking to Ralph Lopez, and we'll talk about a better solution to the troop escalation in Afghanistan. Then we'll chat with Kevin Zeese, National Director of Voters for Peace, about what the peace movement's response to that escalation should be and will be. And as you may have guessed, I also have a very lengthy rant, so let's get right into the show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the rob class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. My first guest today is Kevin Zeese. Kevin's been on before. He's the National Director of Voters for Peace, and we're going to be talking about Peace of the Action, P-E-A-C-E of the Action. Kevin, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, no problem. Last time you were on, we talked a lot about health care, and before we get into Peace of the Action, I just read that the Senate actually voted to uphold the Medicare cuts that were in the House health care bill?
Yeah, well, we'll see what that all means. You know, a lot of those Medicare cuts are Medicare Advantage, which is kind of a private insurance version of Medicare that's much, much more expensive and really is one of the problems in Medicare. If there was going to be one thing that it was worth doing in that Senate bill as far as going after the insurance industry, getting rid of Medicare Advantage would be it. But my guess is that it will probably also result in some real cuts to Medicare beyond that. And so it could be problematic. We'll see where it really ends up and where they get their money from. I'm sure that the insurance lobby will lobby heavily to protect their private insurance over the real Medicare.
Well, one of the things that I think that this whole reform bill is about is to just totally do away with Medicare. And I heard that Ben Bernanke said something today in his confirmation hearing about that's where the money is. The money is in Medicare.
Well, he's right in that the money is in health care. I mean, that is really where the debt is. That is really where uncontrollable costs are. And, you know, if they go off to Medicare, they're making a mistake because that is the one place that actually there is some control. There is less bureaucracy, less overhead, less waste. The real problem in healthcare dollars is the insurance industry, as you know.
Right.
That's where the waste is. That's where the fraud is. That's where the $11 million average CEO salary is. If you really want to find ways to save money in healthcare, it's the insurance industry.
Well, tell us how you feel about the bill that came out of the House.
I mean, the whole healthcare process is a fiasco. The House and Senate bills are both terrible. Obama's efforts are off mark. From the beginning, President Obama made it clear this was about protecting health insurance and profits first. You know, we had a meeting at the White House early in the process. We lobbied heavily to get a single-payer voice in that meeting. We got one doctor, Dr. Oliver Fine from New York, in, and he was not allowed to speak. He didn't get a chance to say a word. But opening the session for the White House and closing the session for the White House was a representative of the insurance industry. So right from the beginning, it was clear this, where this was going. Then when we got to the Congress, Senator Baucus held a whole series of hearings. 45 people testified, not one advocate of the most popular choice, which is a single-payer improved Medicare for all systems. So that was the beginning, and the end result, as that beginning showed, which was a very pro-insurance company bill. They will reap hundreds of billions of dollars in new annual revenue from this bill. So it's more that it's more a giveaway to the insurance industry than really correcting the healthcare mess. In fact, I was talking to Donna Smith, who's with the California Nurses Association.
She was one of the, been on my show a couple times.
Yeah, she was one of the patients in sicko.
Uh-huh.
And she's talked to all the other patients who are covered in sicko. Not one of them would get a different outcome under these current bills than they would under the present system. So it's not fixing the problem. It's going to enrich the insurance industry and not fix the problems of healthcare in the United States. We really need to step back and start over and move toward a way to expand Medicare to cover everybody.
Well, let's get to just right down to the new issue in foreign policy. We started a coalition, I don't know, a couple months ago called Peace of the Action, P-E-A-C-E, of the action.org. And Obama, you know, sent 22,000 more troops to Afghanistan in February. You and I got to know each other through our anti-war work. And it seems that, to me, it seems like we've been working awfully hard in the anti-war movement. You're the national director for Voters for Peace. I'm on the national board. We thought we were making inroads to get people to stop voting for pro-war candidates. We had Democrats come in 2006 to a majority in both houses of Congress. Now they have super majorities in both houses. We have a Democratic president. And on Tuesday, we watched Barack Obama go in front of West Point, the cadets at West Point, and announce a 30,000 troop surge to Afghanistan. And when I thought of Peace of the Action, which we'll talk about, you were one of the first people to come on board with it. So I don't have to talk all the time. Why don't you explain to my listeners about what we want to do in Peace of the Action and why we're doing it?
Well, I think that it's time on a whole host of progressive issues, including ending wars, for people to get more active, to really step up the activity. You know, in the healthcare debate, we started something called Mobilization for Healthcare. It was sit-ins at insurance company offices and really, you know, put the pressure on them because they are the root of the problem. And if you go to mobilizeforhealthcare.org, you can see what that's about and how we're now evolving and focusing on senators to push a single-payer message. Peace of the Action is going to bring the anti-war movement to a new level. The peace movement is going to really step up and do things that really need to be done. In order to be effective, we have to be able to shut down the capital city. We have to be able to sponsor general strikes. We have to show that people are organized to really make a difference. It's not good enough, as much as it's part of the solution, but it's not good enough by itself to be making phone calls to the White House and phone calls to Congress and traditional lobbying, going and talking to them and writing letters and emails. All that's good, but it's not enough. We are talking about life and death issues here on almost all these issues. You know, the healthcare issue, 45,000 die a year. War is all about death on both sides of the battlefront. And these are really life and death issues, and we have to treat them that way. We can't be, you know, not serious about it. We've got to take a very serious approach and step up and do everything we can. And I think Peace of the Action is a real step in that direction. It's an effort to really organize people in an effective way to make it impossible for the American empire to continue to do business as usual in Washington, D.C. And if we're able to do that, to really show that people are fed up with war and are going to do all they can to stop it, then I think they will start to listen to us. You know, in Obama's speech, he put in a 18-month withdrawal, beginning of the withdrawal. That you know, it's vague and it's filled with loopholes, and it's not a solution at all. It's too slow. It's got lots of problems with it. But that, putting that 18-month withdrawal in there was because the peace movement exists, because we've been pressuring Congress. They feel the pressure in their home districts. And if we can escalate that pressure, and we will really force real solutions, not just a charade like this 18-month withdrawal, which we're going to hold Obama to and try to actually get better.
Well, the 18-month withdrawal, like you said, wasn't even a withdrawal. Nobody is saying the word withdrawal. It's saying the word drawdown, which is much different than withdrawal. It's just removing a certain amount of troops. And we saw George Bush play with troop numbers and play with that rhetoric, you know, his entire presidency.
Well, we saw Obama do that during the campaign.
Right.
You know,
and
he started his speech saying, "I'm going to end the war in Iraq."
Right.
And you get to the details,
right,
and his ending the war leaves 50,000 to 80,000 troops plus more than 100,000 mercenaries, and that's 180,000 troops, private and public, and he called that ending the war. So yeah, you got to watch the details with these politicians.
And it worked for Bush in 2002. It worked for Bush in 2004. But then in 2005, we went to Crawford, Texas, and we had thousands and thousands and thousands of people come to Crawford, tens of thousands of people around the country become involved in the peace movement. And it didn't work for them in 2006, Kevin, because, you know, it didn't work for the Republicans, but it worked for the Democrats. And here
That's
we
right.
are. We've had a Democratic Congress now for over 2 years, three
Right.
years, and nothing has happened. So what has to work is the grassroots. We're the ones that have to work. And Peace of the
You
Action
know,
is going to contain a component of camping right on the lawn of the Washington Monument to draw more people to get involved in this process.
And that's always what has worked, is grassroots. Bottom-up change is the reality. The top is always the followers and never the leaders. And the grassroots needs to be organized, needs to be consistent, and needs to be persistent. And that's what I love about Peace of the Action. It's not just a one-day event. It is a multi-month event. It'll go on until we to show the powers that be in Washington that we're serious, and they really start to take us seriously and start to listen to what the grassroots is saying. You know, it was not LBJ who gave us the civil rights laws. It was not Woodrow Wilson who gave women the right to vote. It was movements
right.
that made those things happen. And it's not going to be Barack Obama that gives us single-payer health care. It's not going to be Barack Obama who ends the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's going to be people demanding it. And that's what we have to look at. It's our responsibility. As much as I can criticize Obama, and there's a lot to criticize, we have to look at ourselves and say, are we doing enough? Because that's really what it comes down to. The people have to lead, and we're not leading.
So, Kevin, I just really want to thank you for the work you do with healthcare. You're just a really committed activist. The anti-war work you do, the Voters for Peace, I think is very important. But tell people how they can become involved in Peace of the Action, which is actually PEACE of the Action.
It's PEACEoftheaction.org. You can go there. You can sign up and get involved. Also visit votersforpeace.us to get involved and pledge to only vote for peace candidates so we can be serious about the little electoral power we do have and use it well. It's the only way to waste your vote is to vote for what you don't believe in. If you don't believe in war, you cannot vote for candidates who support war, and that means those who vote for funding, et cetera. So you've got to be stand strong. So join us at peaceoftheaction.org and votersforpeace.us and get involved and get active.
And you can come out for the entire action from, you know, point A when we set up camp on March 13th to whenever the troops start coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan. And not only is, I believe, not only is this 18-month lie a political ploy because Democrats want to be reelected in 2010, but I also think it's a way to shut down the anti-war movement.
Definitely.
And we can't let them do that. We can't let Obama put a timeline. Like you said, we the people have to insist on and work for and sacrifice for our timeline. Thanks, Kevin, for being on the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was my good friend Kevin Zeis. Stay tuned, and we'll be chatting with Ralph Lopez from Jobs for Afghans. Thank you.
My name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers, such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
A Nation Rocked to Sleep, written and read by Carly Sheehan. Have you ever heard the sound of a mother screaming for her son? The torrential rains of a mother's weeping will never be done. They say he's a hero. You should be glad that he's won. But have you ever heard the sound of a mother screaming for her son? Have you ever heard the sound of a father holding back his cries? He must be brave because his son died for another man's lies. The only grief he allows himself are long, deep sighs. Have you ever heard the sound of a father holding back his cries? Have you ever heard the sound of taps played at your brother's grave? They say he died so the flag will continue to wave, but I believe he died because they had oil to save. Have you ever heard the sound of taps played at your brother's grave? Have you ever heard the sound of a nation being rocked to sleep? The leaders want to keep you numb so the pain won't be so deep. But if we, the people, let them continue, another mother will weep. Have you ever heard the sound of a nation being rocked to sleep?
I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, it is the first thing I will do. I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war. You can take that to the bank.
Welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. This is Cindy Sheehan. My next guest is Ralph Lopez, and he has a political science and economics degree from Yale, and he co-founded Jobs for Afghans. Ralph, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Cindy Sheehan, my hero.
Oh, thank you. Well, thanks for being on the show. I think your program, what you're working on, is very important.
It's absolutely my pleasure to be on the show. And yes, we have even more to work on now that President Obama has made his announcement.
Right. Well, I was reading an article you wrote. I forget what it's called. I don't even remember what my articles are called. But it's something about the peace movement matures or grows up or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that it seemed to suggest that the peace movement or the anti-war movement, when we call for troops home immediately, that we want to leave some kind of vacuum there. And of course, that's never the case. But I think your program, you know, is exactly your program and the introducing the legislation is exactly what we need to do in not just Afghanistan, but Iraq and America, too. Would be really nice if we had some jobs here. So why don't you explain to my listeners about what Jobs for Afghans, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, Jobs for Afghans, but it's a very detailed proposal that you're making.
Yes, Cindy, and that's a very good point. There has been debate within the peace movement about economic assistance and civilian assistance to Afghanistan, running the gamut from the viewpoint that this is just another form of economic imperialism. We're giving assistance to a corrupt government. We're basically, once again, through non-military means, telling Afghans what to do. And really, it's all in the details of what you're proposing. You have to drill down much further. And what we are proposing, and after a lot of research, is programs run for Afghans targeted at the poorest of Afghans for specific things. And going through, for example, Afghan non-governmental organizations, organizations like RAWA, which is the Revolutionary Association of Women in Afghanistan.
Right.
Organizations that have nothing to do with the government, and as well, some government ministries, it's a misconception to think that the entire Afghan government is corrupt, as any government has its corrupt parts and parts that actually are functioning. There is one functioning ministry we found by wide acclaim in Afghanistan, which has done the work of going down to the village level and creating over 20,000 community development councils, which are people in the village, about half of them women, to evaluate projects and say from the community, this is what we need, this is what's going to help us. And so this is what we designed, a program which, and a lot of it gets down to exactly what you call it. You know, when we say jobs for Afghans, people say, well, how about jobs for Americans? And also, again, bringing up the specter of economic imperialism. When you say the word reparations, the same people suddenly get it and say, aha, okay, we could be for that. We could be for reparations because that implies that we have wronged a people. And we have wronged this people since we abandoned them after their fight against the Soviet Union. We abandoned them to civil war.
Right.
2 million of them starved. And now, after 2001, we've abandoned them again. Basically, the causes of this new insurgency, and this is something that President Obama did not say in his speech, are economic. Now, let me back up a little bit. When we went to Afghanistan, we did not hear a single person say he wanted to see the or she to see the return of the Taliban.
Right.
Nobody
likes
the Taliban.
Can I ask you a quick question, Ralph? When did
Absolutely.
You go to Afghanistan?
Pardon me?
When did you go to Afghanistan?
We were in Afghanistan this last summer, during the month of June. And so that I and my colleague, who is an Afghan national, went to research this question of, is there another way to address this insurgency? And I must say, after Obama's speech on Tuesday night, that what struck me is that what he's proposing is the exact thing that will bring about precisely the result that he is trying to avoid, a renewed Taliban insurgency, possible new safe harbors for al-Qaeda. And yes, al-Qaeda has been, or rather the Taliban has been, gaining momentum. There is basically no al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but the Taliban has been gaining momentum.
Right.
And the course he has chosen is most likely to increase it because it derives from a fundamental misunderstanding of the causes of this insurgency. It's economic. It's not ideological. Most people dislike the Taliban. They cut off heads. They cut off hands. In the old days, everyone remembers that. No one wants to go back to those days. And so what you have is, and President Obama alluded to it, is a failure, but the failure has been one of the reconstruction. You have 40% unemployment. You have the Taliban as the employer of the last resort. They pay young men $8 a day to participate in a fight. You have three-quarters of the population with no safe drinking water. You still have 1 out of 5 infants dying before the age of 5 of easily preventable diseases and malnutrition. There is literal starvation. And so what Obama is proposing is a military solution to a non-military problem.
Well, and then we've recently found out that it costs $1 million per year to keep each soldier in Afghanistan. He said that the new surge, the troop surge, was going to cost $30 billion more dollars, And like you said, there's very few Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, about 100. So we're going to have 1,000 soldiers for each Al-Qaeda, and I think $300 million for each member of Al-Qaeda, if you want to break it down that way. How much would your program cost? I know you are proposing a bill in Congress. What is the budget for jobs for Afghans and for your proposed bill?
Well, we did crunch the numbers, Cindy, and we came up with a number of different scenarios. In essence, what we are proposing would fit into what we spend in under 1 month of spending for military operations. So this would be approximately $4 billion. And that would cover a robust program of the kind that we are proposing, targeted to the poorest of Afghans, the guys that are joining the Taliban because they have no other choices. And about $4 billion would do it for an entire year. We're proposing that this goes on for 2 years, doing projects like, for example, digging ditches for water pipeline. Afghanistan has huge water problems. You have enormous problems with the roads, and you don't need to pave them. All you need to do is lay gravel and level them and fill them in, the kind of work that can be done with unskilled labor, which is what most labor is in Afghanistan. But still, giving the dignity of work. Afghans don't want a handout. They want the dignity of work and feeling that they are having a hand in rebuilding their own country, and then they won't join the Taliban. And I'm saying this not as from the point of view of a peace activist. Who else is saying this? Who else is saying this are the generals that we talked to when we were in the country. Who else is saying this is General Carl Eikenberry, who told Congress, he's the former commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, who told the Congress in 2007, and I quote, "Much of the enemy force is drawn from the ranks of unemployed men looking for wages to feed their families," unquote. Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden himself in Brussels last March said most of the Taliban is working for the money. And so you do have an understanding that this is an largely economically based insurgency to which we are now proposing a military solution. But of course you have the problem of the Pentagon just wanting its way. And
right.
What's going to result from their having their way? When you put in 30,000 soldiers into a country, you're obviously going to have more killing, more civilian casualties. The real evil of it all, Cindy, is you have these unemployed young men in Afghanistan fighting because the Taliban has opium money, but who are the American soldiers going over there fighting in large part nowadays? American kids who can find no other jobs. And so you have, you're pitting one pool of young people with no prospects against another pool of young people with even fewer prospects. And it's just really, it's going to result in that Afghans will still hate the Taliban, but they're going to start to hate Americans even more.
Well, Ralph, you know, I just had Malalai Joya on my show a couple weeks ago. And as you know, she's an Afghan parliamentarian. And she said, "Cindy, you know, we're fighting the Taliban. We're fighting the warlords. We don't need to be fighting the Americans also." Now, a jobs program sounds like a great way to help stabilize that country, but if a jobs program only lasts two years, what is the sustainability? What do you have sustainability? I know pumping money into economy, getting people working, but then you build the roads, you dig the ditches. Where is there sustainability built in after those projects are over?
Well, let me address that from two different angles, one the economic and the other from the point of view of security. Economically, in itself, this kind of program results in the formation of small capital. Afghans are natural entrepreneurs. When we were in Kabul, we saw people making small businesses out of almost literally nothing and getting by that way. You would see people selling bicycle parts. You would see people starting fruit stands with leftover pieces of trash, building carts. starting storefronts out of the sides of old Soviet shipping containers. They would saw them in half and hang curtains in front of them, run electric cords from a generator, and start a business. And so what you have is a cultural habit which is good at saving, good at starting small businesses. And once you give folks 2 years of a steady income, and I'm talking about $5 to $7 a day. I'm not talking about much.
Right.
People in Afghanistan will work for $4 a day. That's pretty much the going wage. They'll work for $1 a day if that's all there is. And I'm talking about hard, backbreaking labor. So you have the aspect of capital formation from this kind of a stimulus program, shall we say. Now, from the point of view of security, and yes, you do need security, here's the deal. Afghans are used to taking care of themselves. They have a very strong tribal and clan system.
Right.
And they all know how to fight. So they know who belongs in the village. They know who's hardcore Taliban from outside, who doesn't belong there, and who does belong there, who's some kid that has to be brought back into the family and brought in from the cold. What we are proposing is, and I don't know if you've heard of this author, Stephen Pressfield, who wrote a very famous essay entitled It's the Tribes, Stupid, in Afghanistan. And so really the natural structure of Afghan society is the tribal structure. And once you reinforce that, and that is exactly what some tribal elders, particularly in Zazai province, are trying to do, reinforce that traditional structure rather than build up the Afghan National Police or the Afghan National Army, which are warlords' kids beholden to nobody but the warlords, then you will have security. So Obama is proposing exactly the wrong things in a number of different ways.
Well, we just have a couple minutes left. So tell my listeners and me where you are all with this and what can my listeners do to help?
Well, in the wake of President Obama's decision, what we are doing is joining a number of a coalition of peace groups. And next up in terms of responsibility for this surge, of course, is the House Appropriations Committee. The president can say he's going to have an escalation, but the Congress, as a co-equal branch of government, has responsibility for oversight in foreign policy. They have to appropriate the funds. And so we are targeting the House Appropriations Committee, chaired by Representative David Obey of Wisconsin. I want the people of Wisconsin who are listening to know that they can have a huge impact by prevailing on Chairman Obey. And he has made some remarks, for example, suggesting that he will not pass war funding for this escalation unless there is a tax on the wealthy to finance it. Well, we'd rather have no funding to finance the escalation, period.
Right. Well, why don't we just, you know, stop the wars, and we would have plenty of money for jobs in Iraq and jobs in Afghanistan and jobs here in America.
And jobs so, here in America.
Ralph, and tell my listeners about your website, how they can get a hold of you.
The website is jobsforafghans.org. That's jobs, plural, for Afghans.org, all one string. And the information is there. We also happen to have the link to the House Appropriations Committee at the top of the website at the moment so that they can easily look up who's on that committee. You have Joe Serrano from New York, John Oliver, Massachusetts, David Price, North Carolina. You can look down the list of these Congress members on that committee and ask them to prevail upon Chairman Obey and tell them that it's their responsibility as congressmen as well to have a say into American foreign policy and to stop the funding for the escalation so that we can have that, what, $40 billion a year they're planning on spending next year for the escalation alone, for jobs and health care and the needs here at home in America. It's very simple. It's penny wise and pound foolish not to have this kind of program because that's how you stabilize Afghanistan.
Well, Ralph, thank you so much for your courageous work, and I look forward to having you back on, and maybe we can talk about some successes soon.
Cindy, it's been my pleasure.
Well, thank you. Again, that was Ralph Lopez. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with my rant.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at cindysheehansoapbox.com and 1360 AM Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas. This is my rant called 30,000 Wrongs Will Not Make It Right. And as always, you can find my pieces at cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com. I don't read all of them on the air, so it'd be great if you could go to cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com, become a follower of my blog, and read all of my articles there. I've had to reluctantly watch many presidential speeches since my son was killed in Iraq in 2004. I was even dragged out of a Bush State of the Union speech in 2006. I didn't want to go to that one anyway, but I was dragged out for just wearing a shirt with an anti-war message. Now, I knew that Obama was going to announce that he would be condemning 30,000 to 35,000 more troops to Afghanistan and Pakistan. That wasn't exactly a state secret. I also knew that his speech would be filled with jingoistic propaganda. That's a given with presidential speeches, and the Pope of Hope is no different. However, I was not prepared for the physical sickness that overcame me while he was speaking. His delivery was wooden and not convincing, but the words tore my heart apart like I was a newbie to presidential calumny. I did not support Obama when he ran for president because he said he was going to send more troops to Afghanistan. He's a rare bird, a president that fulfills a campaign promise, or even just a politician that fulfills a campaign promise. I'm not surprised or disappointed, but I am filled with anger. I'm angry that thousands of more mothers will, without reason or rhyme, be served the unending pain of burying a child. I was watching Obama's speech at a bar in Las Vegas after a protest at the federal building there, and again I was punched in the gut with Obama telling the cadets at West Point that he has, quote, "As president, I have signed a letter of condolence to the family of each American who gives their life in these wars. I have read the letters from the parents and spouses of those who deployed. I have visited our courageous wounded warriors at Walter Reed. I have traveled to Dover to meet the flag-draped caskets of 18 Americans returning home to their final resting place. I see firsthand the terrible wages of war," end quote. Just like damn George Bush and George Bush's evil vice president, Obama has no freaking idea what the terrible wages of war are. Signing letters or saluting caskets or meeting with the wounded are not the same thing as receiving one of those letters, lying in one of those caskets, or being maimed for the rest of your life. He has only witnessed the terrible wages of war from a remote viewing location that is filtered through the gauze of a deep disconnect from the violent pain that he himself is imposing. Another thing, no one in our armed forces are giving their lives. No one has given his or her life for decades now, if ever, in our history. The people who have been killed in the racket of war have had their lives stolen from them and their futures denied by chicken hawks who sign condolence letters in comfortable offices surrounded by millions of dollars of protection. Don't even start with the bullcrap that our troops are volunteers. If they are volunteers, then I would suggest every one of them or any one of them try to volunteer not to be deployed to Afghanistan. December 7th, 1941 was a day that has lived in infamy, but it was not used to justify the waging of unending wars, even though our permanent bases still remain in Germany and Japan after 65 years. However, Obama again uses attacks on 9/11 to justify this absolutely bat guano crazy occupation of Afghanistan. No matter what he says, it is an occupation. In the speech he gave in front of his cadet props, Obama said that the attack on 9/11 was vicious. I agree that 9/11 was awful, and it is a day that we surely will never forget. But if that was vicious, then what does Obama call what America has been doing in Iraq AFPAC now for twice as many years as World War II lasted? What's worse than vicious? Genocide, that's what. Genocide is the systematic killing of a racial or cultural group. And please don't waste your time telling me that Obama has a good heart or a great intellect, because if he had either one of those things, our troops would be coming home by now. Obama is just another coward that has risen to the highest office in the world, and I'm tired of having to be shoved by crazy people, chased and shot at by police, called names that make even me blush, scrimp for every penny to stay afloat in this peace business, traveling and protesting to the point of exhaustion, etc. Not only did Obama condemn 30,000 troops to horror with just one speech, he also condemned the real anti-war movement that was opposed to his policies from the beginning to many, many more years of our sacrifices. Well, I'm not going to stop protesting and doing all of the above things, but I'm certainly not doing them for the rest of my life. If you believe in the mythical drawdown that Obama has just lied through his teeth about, then I ask you, where did the one combat battalion per month out of Iraq go? Remember that broken promise? There has been no significant drawdown of troops from Iraq at all. No matter what Obama says, these wars are not just, and we are not right, and we only have the might of the war machine to open those new markets he talked about in his speech. No matter what Obama says, these are open-ended wars, but I am not an open-ended anti-war activist. We have to end them as soon as possible. We have to escalate our peace as the war machine escalates its violence. Do you want to go all the way for peace? Join us this spring in D.C. for Peace of the Action. Again, go to www.peaceoftheaction.org for more information. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the rob class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the rob class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
My Ask Cindy question today is actually a comment from someone on the Soapbox's Facebook fan page. He wanted to comment about our recent show with Noam Chomsky. Thomas Smith writes, "Noam was good, just one quibble. I don't think that he is right about the difference between libertarian socialists like himself and the Bolsheviks. The Bolsheviks wanted workers' democracy, but that wasn't so easy in a situation in which the economy had been destroyed by the war and 17 imperial armies were invading the country. It's rather the case that libertarian socialists want workers' democracy, but don't want to do what it takes to get it." Thomas, well, I'm not sure that libertarian socialists don't want to do what it takes to get it, but thanks for commenting, and I just want my listeners to know that you too can become a fan of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox on Facebook. The page is Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox Radio Show.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the rob class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the rob class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehan's soapbox.com.
Your soapbox assignment today is to check out the websites of my guests, www.pieceoftheaction.org, www.jobsforafghans.org. So I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my assistant producer, Mikey, my guests, Kevin Zies and Ralph Lopez, Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas, and you most of all for listening. Stay tuned next week. We have a great show. I'm actually going to Oslo, Norway, and Copenhagen, Denmark to protest Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize with some activists in Europe, and then to go to Copenhagen to make our demands known for an environment that is healthy and sustainable. So next week, Rosa Clemente, who ran for vice president on the Green Party ticket with Cynthia McKinney, will be interviewing Immortal Techniques, so that should be really exciting. So tune back in next week. Thank you.
I must make my witness. Have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.